This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
No, they're real people. They're real liberal activists, and I respect their right to do it, but it's not a productive exercise.
Senator Marco Rubio skips out on hosting town halls.
I think I was pulled over the edge, perhaps, because I was supportive of Donald Trump as president. But I've been moving in this direction for a number of years.
From Democrat to independent to home of the Republicans, former State Representative Michelle Raywinkle Vasalinda shares her journey to the GOP. And Florida Chairman Blaise Ingolia says, brace for more.
We are actively talking to a lot of elected officials across the state, getting them to switch.
On some of the top issues, ride-sharing bills advances.
2017 has to be the year that the legislative session gets this done and creates a uniform process for the state of Florida.
Meanwhile, Florida's colleges asks for a level playing field.
We're Florida's Central Park. That's how I look at us, and we will be the next dominant place.
All that and more coming up on episode 95 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. There is a lot of news happening. There's a lot of information to process. We just wrapped up the last committee week before Florida's legislative session begins March 7th. But before we get into that, let's look on the national stage.
We need to hear from you, Senator.
Where it's a tough time for Republicans, and Florida's very own Marco Rubio is feeling the heat. There he is, trying to get away from an activist, wondering why he's not holding town halls.
Town hall today. We need to hear from you, Senator.
Rubio explains
Senator,
his position as to why he's running from these forums on the program Facing South Florida with host Jim DeFede.
Some of your Republican colleagues, Senator Tom Cotton in Arkansas, Bill Cassidy in Louisiana, Chuck Grassley in Iowa, held town hall meetings. You did not.
Right.
Why not?
Because they're not town halls anymore. And I wish they were, because I enjoy that process very much. Going back to my time as Speaker of the House, I hosted over 100 idea raisers around the state. The problem now is, and it's all in writing, I'm not making this up, what these groups really want is for me to schedule a public forum. They then organize 300, 400, 500, 600 liberal activists in the two counties or wherever I am in the state. They, according to the document, they get there early, they take up all the front seats, they spread themselves out, they ask questions, they all cheer when the questions are asked, they're instructed to boo no matter what answer I give. They're instructed to interrupt me if I go too long and start chanting things. Then at the end, they're also told not to give up their microphone when they ask questions. It's all in writing. It's in this indivisible document.
So you don't believe that they're real?
They're real people. They're real liberal activists, and I respect their right to do it. But it's not a productive exercise. It's all designed to be able to have news coverage at night that says, look at all these angry people screaming at your senator.
Now let's turn back to Florida's capital. The big issue looming here in the Sunshine State is the infighting with the Republican leadership. It's getting personal, folks. House Speaker Richard Corcoran is now the subject of attack ads from Governor Rick Scott's Political Action Committee.
It's Rich. The Speaker of the House made this phony political attack ad about government waste and used your tax dollars to do it. That's what politicians do best, waste your money. So what exactly are the Tallahassee politicians up to now? Trying to kill our tourism industry. Let's look at their false attacks and note none of your tax dollars were spent making this rebuttal.
But this is Corcoran's fight, as he continues to push sweeping reforms and attack ads of his own, and bold moves to eliminate programs important to the jobs governor, Rick Scott.
What I care about is getting people jobs.
Corcoran wanted to eliminate two agencies that ran the state's jobs, incentive, and marketing programs.
I mean, the only thing this could be would be politics. You would never think this way in business. In our business, in your business life, if something works, you keep doing it.
Let's listen in as Corcoran explains his philosophy during his keynote speech at the Leon County Republican Party's Lincoln Day dinner.
Thank you guys for having me. I'd like to thank the governor for all his friendship and good work helping him. Oh, sorry, this is last year's speech. I say that tongue in cheek, but I do want to talk briefly about, I think that what's going on in part is there's a fight for our conservative philosophy, you know, a fight for, are we a party of Lincoln? Are we a party of Reagan? And what do we believe? And what does that conservative mean to somebody? And I think, my colleagues believe, that it's somewhat simple. You know, we believe in less taxes. We believe in limited government. We believe that when you grow a government too big, going back to Hayek, that you end up with a tyranny and serfdom for the people and the masses, and you lose the individualism. We believe that able-bodied adults should not be getting welfare. We also believe that able-bodied, successful companies should not be getting welfare. We believe that when you go out and you campaign and you say, this is who I am, that when you get elected and you're in the office that you've campaigned for, that you should govern the way you said you would. And it seems like that's not that big of a deal. And so we sat down, the whole leadership team, my colleagues and I, we sat down, we started talking about the things that we would do that were conservative. And truthfully, we thought that, hey, if we do these reforms and we push these envelopes in this conservative way, that people will say, hey, look at those guys. It's like, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington. And, well, we were wrong. You know, they look at us more like Scarface and they say hello to the bad man.
And Visit Florida is fighting back heavily against Scarface. And the House Budget Writing Committee voted 18-12 for a bill that would still kill Enterprise Florida. However, it would spare Visit Florida by gutting its $78 million budget to just $25 million. So the fight continues. This is The Rotunda. So here is something interesting. While at the Leon County Republican Party's Lincoln Day dinner, I was a bit surprised to bump into Democratic State Representative Michelle Raywinkle Vasalinda. We talked briefly. I brushed my surprise aside, knowing she's been heavily criticized by members of her party. I've been observing on social media. Some have criticized her for her unusual votes and stances. For example, Vasalinda didn't just vote to allow guns on college campuses, she co-sponsored the legislation. To the praise of Republican Party of Florida Chairman Blazing Golia.
In my county, I had two elected officials switch. We had one switch last night in Port St. Lucie, and we're going to keep on doing that because we truly believe that these people are Republicans at heart. They just don't know it. Some of them are conservative Democrats, but I do truly believe that a lot of these, there was no way I was going to come here and not switch somebody in front of you guys. So at this time, I would like to call up a dear friend who is going to switch parties from the Democrat Party to the Republican Party. She's been an amazing friend. She's been, I got to serve with her in the Florida House. She's just an amazing lady. Everybody give a big, warm welcome to Representative Raywinkle Vasalinda.
Of course, I had to get the scoop, so I joined Vasalinda and Ingolia at their table for a chat.
No, I'd like to talk to both of you if I could. Yeah, you guys are making news.
I suppose.
You took over the speaker's spotlight.
Right. Yeah.
At least for me. So what went into this and your decision, and I'll talk to both of you, and what does it mean to welcome her to the party? I'll start with you. Why did you make this switch? You left the Democratic Party to be an independent, and now was this in the plan to be full circle to the GOP?
I think the chair would tell you that for a while this has been something that I've been feeling, working towards. And, I've always felt like a conservative, and I didn't feel toward the end of my service in the House that there was room for a conservative Democrat. And so I just feel very comfortable and I'm actually very happy to be here tonight.
What do you make of her position? Well, starting off as a Democrat, did you see it as sincere? You saw it long coming that, hey, she's better off in our camp.
Well, it's not better off. I think this is where she belonged for a while. We were joking earlier saying that I used to pass her on the floor of the House after she took a vote, and I would walk up to her and I would whisper and I go, why are you a Democrat? Why are you a Democrat? So we are honored and it is great to have the representative among the ranks of Florida Republicans. But the bigger picture is I think that, Representative, this is a bigger picture. It's a microcosm of what I think is going on with a lot of people's thought process now. A lot of people don't identify with the liberal left, is what we have right now. A lot more people are moderate, fiscally conservative or conservative, that are still Democrats. They're registered as an MPA when they truly should be Republican. And what we're asking people is to say, hey, switch to the Republican Party, be involved, have a voice in our primaries, and then if we do that, I think we'll make the party and the nation better.
What a time to join the Republican Party. And I'll go back to Representative Angulo to answer this, but it seemed like there's a lot of, they're trying to find their way right now with the president, and they're a lot of fracturing so far. So why did you join at this point? And was it really Donald Trump's message that pulled you over?
No, I think, well, I think I was pulled over the edge, perhaps, because I was supportive of Donald Trump as president. But I've been moving in this direction for a number of years. And so I just think that this was the right time. And I think the Republicans always have had a real strong sense of principles and a real foundation, and I wouldn't call them fractured. I wouldn't call now us fractured. I would say that we're just trying to refine where the platform's going to be going forward. And I think Donald Trump has brought forward some new ideas and some different ideas and some other priorities. But they're priorities that resonate with me and I think resonate with a lot of moderate and conservative Americans. And I think as the chair has said, I think this is going to bring people into the Republican Party.
You're listening to my conversation with newly minted Republican Michelle Raywinkle Vasilenda and RPOF Chairman Blaise Angulo.
What was the question?
On the fractured part, I was asking her about what a time to join when there's uncertainty with those who weren't particularly happy with how the presidential rhetoric and campaign went. And
yeah,
it sort of split some longtime Republicans who have left the party.
I'll split that into two potential answers. The first part of that is that I don't think it's fractured per se. We're having disagreements. When you dominate politics the way we dominate politics, and now when it's not just the state of Florida, when you look at Congress and you look at a lot of state houses across the state houses and state senates across the state and governorships, it's pretty much dominated by Republicans. So when there are a lot more Republican elected officials, then you wind up having the disagreements sort of get highlighted a little bit more. And quite frankly, that's what the media wants to write about, which, you know, and we get that. But, you know, Donald Trump doing what he's doing right now, he's fulfilling a lot of campaign promises. A lot of people are very upset with what's going on in Washington, D.C. They are tired of hearing career politicians do one thing, say another thing. I think, you know, any people criticizing Donald Trump is really people criticizing that he's going in and actually changing the status quo. And any time you clash against the status quo, there are going to be people who are just going to push back. So we're seeing that right now. But at the end of the day, we have an opportunity. On a national level, we have the presidency, we have the House, and we have the Senate. We have at least 2 years to put forth some policy that is actually going to make some substantive changes in people's lives and prove to people that we were just not arguing for arguing's sake over the last 8 years. We weren't saying, hey, President Obama did this and we didn't like that, and just complaining with not really having an alternative. We're going to put forward our alternatives. And when we do, and when we start showing people that the policy change and the changes that we're going to make in this country are going to make people's lives better, it's going to be very difficult for Democrats to change the narrative after that.
What do you say to those who have long supported you as Democrat and may be heartbroken to see or hear this news that you have made the complete switch to the other side?
I served them well. I believe I served them well for the 8 years that I was in the House. I represented this district as I thought they would want me to represent them. And most of the votes I took, I believed in. But the way I argued them often were very much on the Republican sort of wavelength or thought process. I mean, you could go back and listen to so many things that I did. And I think that's what the chair is talking about, Representative Bengolio is talking about. And so I think that this was, you know, I don't think I've changed any spots here. I think I represented my district well, and now I'm doing something different. I'm out of office. I went to be an NPA before I left office in order to support President Trump. I thought that was the right and ethical thing to do. I didn't change to be a Republican before I left office in November because I didn't think that was the right thing to do. I waited to a specific time where I thought it was the right thing to do for the district that I left. And so this is, you know, now it's me. I'm not representing a district at this moment. I'm not in office. I am being who I feel like I've been for a very long time, and it feels great, frankly. And I'm happy and proud to be a Republican and very happy that they've welcomed me and to sit here with my good colleagues. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for speaking with me. And I understand this is not the last. Your plan is to try and recruit more, you mentioned.
Yeah, and I think more people in the Democrat Party should take Representative Veselin's lead and come home to where they feel comfortable. And for the Republican Party of Florida, we are going to continuing this push. We are actively talking to a lot of elected officials across the state, getting them to switch, and especially in a lot of these conservative smaller counties where there are a lot of Democrats, but they are conservative Democrats and they vote usually, you know, 70-80% for our nominees at the top of the ticket. They're Republicans at heart. So it's just about time they took the leadership that the representative took and switch over. We'll welcome them with open arms, and then they can be part of our conversation on how we pick our nominees.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good seeing you.
It's always good to see you,
John. Yeah, likewise.
This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes. This program is supported by listeners like you, and we welcome key corporate sponsors that understand listeners like you appreciate limited program interruptions. They know that when I mention their corporate sponsorship, you as a loyal listener take the time to visit their website to learn more. The same way you visit rotundapodcast.com to send your generous donation to keep this program going. Thanks again for your support. Uber Wars is back again. Well, it appears to be a smoother ride this year. If you remember last session, the Senate pulled the brakes on ride-sharing legislation, but with its big opponent out of office, Senate President Andy Gardner, who's since been replaced by Senate President Joe Negron, transportation network companies are hopeful.
I first learned about Uber going back about a year ago, visiting a friend in Atlanta. And we wanted just to go out and just visit some friends and everything. And we knew we'd be drinking. I said to her, I was like, well, what are we going to do? Who's going to be the designated driver? And she says, neither one of us. And I was like, what? And that's when she said to me that she introduced Uber to me. And I was like, what is Uber? And she says, watch this. And she takes out her cell phone and she turns on the app and swipes it. And next minute I know, I see a picture of a person with their car and their license plate, and you can actually watch the car as it's going around and seeing how close it is to your location.
That's Tallahassee resident Joelle Wilczek sharing her story before the House Committee on Government Accountability about how she was first introduced to Uber.
The Uber came to my hotel, picked me up, and dropped me off right at the front entrance of the concert. No questions asked. It was an experience and very, very simple. Right now, I could say in the past 3 months, I am proud to say that I am an Uber driver. I thought if someone can provide a service and I enjoyed it as much, that I would like to do the same thing for the city of Tallahassee.
But opponents like Louis Minardi, the owner of the Yellow Cab Company of Tampa, say the bill doesn't provide enough oversight of ride-sharing vehicles.
So there's nobody enforcing it when the law is what it is now. So as you lighten the load, there's even going to be less out there. So all we're saying is that the ride-sharing bill should stay a ride-sharing, not an Uber and Lyft bill, and something that works for both platforms and the insurance and the requirements that most drivers need in other fields ought to be kept to the higher standard, not go backwards.
House Bill 221, which creates statewide regulation for ride-sharing, is sponsored by Palm Harbor Republican Chris Sprouse, who says they've included higher insurance coverage, and he breaks it down like this.
During that period of time, they have $50,000 for injury, $100,000 total, $25,000 for property damage. They haven't picked up a rider yet. They haven't accepted a ride or a prearranged ride on the platform. Now they have a ride. They click that they accept that ride. Now they're on their way to pick somebody up. During the period in which they accept the trip, throughout the period of time where the person exits their vehicle, that's where you see that liability coverage rise to $1 million. So if they're in an accident during that period of time, they would be $1 million. And to speak to that, especially that portion, Representative Pigman, that far outweighs or exceeds the level of coverage that you find traditionally in the taxi cab or limo industry.
The bill passed with a favorable vote of 21 out of 22 members on the committee. Miami Gardens Democrat Barbara Watson voted against the measure, taking issue with background checks for drivers only being done every 3 years. The group Floridians for Ride-Sharing Coalition say the legislation is worth continued bipartisan support.
Convenient transportation options are an absolute necessity for people with vision loss, and ride-sharing introduces a simple, affordable means to get around.
Kim Galben Countryman is the executive director of Lighthouse of the Big Bend.
Ride-sharing truly is an eye-opening experience for people who have traditionally had to rely on other people to take them places. That's why we are proud to support these innovative services.
Julio Fuentes is president of the Florida State Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.
These services also help provide individuals in minority communities with a greater access to the affordable, reliable transportation options offered by ride-sharing services.
Other business groups like the Florida Chamber and the Greater Tampa Chamber of Commerce are also backing the bill through the Floridians for Ride-Sharing Coalition. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. We're running out of time, but we've got to squeeze in some more news during this downtime before session kicks up. I recently had the pleasure of joining an old Florida Public Radio colleague, Tom Flanagan, and Florida's top-notch journalists like Tia Mitchell and fellow radio guy Rick Flagg on a panel sharing insight on how some proposed education policies will play out this session. Tia Mitchell with the Florida Times Union is back to recap our experience before the Association of Florida Colleges.
So again, these higher education reforms are being pushed by President Negron in the Senate. And right now the House is kind of taking a hands-off approach and letting the Senate do what it wants to do with higher education without really saying whether or not they like it or not. But especially when it comes to the state colleges, what we would formally consider the community college system, some of the things that Senator Negron wants to do benefit state universities at the detriment to state colleges, they would probably argue. Certain things like limiting the four-year degrees that the state colleges can create, making sure that there isn't what Senator Negron likes to call mission creep, where he feels that state colleges sometimes step on the toes of the universities. And so that is a turf war that Senator Negron has been involved in for years. But again, now he has the bully pulpit in the Senate to try to get something done. But it is very controversial. The Senate committee approved his bill that reforms community colleges, but there were Republicans on that committee who basically made it clear that they were voting yes as a courtesy to Senator Negron, but that they had concerns. You know, those state colleges are a powerful special interest group, and every state senator has one or two state colleges in their district, and they're hearing from the businesses and the business leaders that are involved with those state colleges. They're their lobbying ability is great as well. So once again, you have the Senate members wanting to, you know, give President Negron what he wants and as a leader defer to him, but there's a special interest group back at home. And so they, again, are in a weird position.
Let's hear direct from one of those colleges. Tom Lystel is president of South Florida State College.
I've said to the governor in a recent letter, we're in the middle of nowhere, but yet in the center of everything. And that's, we're Florida's Central Park. That's how I look at us. And we will be the next dominant place because people will want to relocate to an area based on quality of life. And that's the number one reason why people do it, along with a good education system. So with an aging population, we're serving them through our healthcare programs. We're embracing advanced manufacturing. We're looking for innovative programs that will combine community assets, such as the United States Air Force military range, which is in Avon Park, a huge community asset. This is where corporations worldwide are looking to us to do some outstanding, cutting-edge training opportunities that are so innovative and beyond that will benefit the world globally. And we're right here in a very peaceful community that, again, is responsive and so ready to adopt these things. Funding is critical for us to continue our mission of really what we do. And our vision is ambitious. Our vision statement at our college simply says, South Florida State College will be the academic destination to drive regional transformation through innovative collaboration. That's us. It's our essence. And that's who we serve in our community, to put people to work. That's what the governor is challenging all of his state colleges to do, put people to work in high-paying jobs. And we're going to do that.
What do you think will happen?
I think the state college reforms are going to be amended in ways that make it more palatable to the state colleges and therefore less controversial.
All right, well, Tia Mitchell, thank you so much for speaking with me here on the Rotunda.
Thank you.
We will keep a close eye on the higher education discussion. As we wrap up, here's one more bit of news from Tallahassee's mayor, Andrew Gillum.
Hey everybody, this is Andrew Gillum. I'm coming to you from Central Florida, where I just wrapped up a speech. And in that speech, I told the audience that I was seriously considering a run for governor. And now I wanted to share that information with you all. For the last 20 years, we've all watched our state shrink from the challenges that confront it. I'm hoping that we can begin the work to put this state on the path to representing people, everyday people in this state who need an opportunity and a shot. Share with me your thoughts on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and otherwise, because this is going to be a real serious conversation and I want you involved.
So what do you all think? Is it too premature for Gillum to jump in on the governorship? Well, it certainly keeps his name in the spotlight as a rising star in the Democratic ranks, and Republicans are eager to shoot him down, calling for his resignation as mayor. We'll, of course, keep following that story as others are set to announce their interests in running for governor. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to one of the newest members of the Republican Party, Michelle Raywinkle Vasalinda, and RPOF Chairman Blaise Angolia. Plus Florida Times Union reporter Tia Mitchell and Tom Lystel with South Florida State College. Be sure to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and also check us out at rotundapodcast.com. And as always, our wonderful intern, John Hines, will be following and keeping us up to date on social media, so be sure to tweet regularly, tweet often, ask your questions, we'll respond. Most importantly, join us again next week, right here, for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.